lacking of return guys. Speedy B finds a seam. Brandon Banks has some room. Look out! Banks near the 50 to the 40. Brandon Banks down near the 20. He's going to score! Touchdown! Oh my goodness!
Gable running away from defenders. Down the side.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike. So you remember last week we
Hi,
started...
Josh.
How are you doing?
Good.
We never really ask each other that, you know? We just get into the news. And we never really, you know, get into a little banter, but...
Little small talk.
Things going good?
Yeah, pretty good.
Life treating you well?
Yeah.
Good. That's what I like to hear. So anyway, remember last week when we talked about the CFL Twitter Awards and how we were nominated for Best Podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Well, not so much. No, they the CFL Twitter Awards sent out a tweet last week saying that they were no longer considering podcasts or blogs for the awards because technically they aren't on Twitter. I'm glad I got that message before I started. We sort of teased last week that I would do something kind of funny, and we had discussed it off microphone that I was going to do like a political attack ad sort of thing, and I was in the process of writing it. Like I'd come home and I was ready to sit down and start figuring out what to write. And decided to go to Twitter first and then saw that and I was like, ah, damn it. But so, and then I came up with an idea of doing like a rap diss song, because I don't know if you know about this whole Drake, whatever the hell the other guy's name is, beef. And,
I've seen it. Milk.
I don't know who he is either. I guess,
but, yeah, I've seen it on Twitter a lot and I'm like, I don't want to see it anymore. But yeah.
So I in the spirit of that, I was like, oh, maybe I could do like a rap diss song, because like I listen to a lot of hip hop music. So would have been a, you know, fat ginger guy making disgusting rhymes at the other CFL podcast. And I thought it would, these things would be funny, but now I don't have to do it, so I can save myself some time.
But now, yeah, we can't, as Ray from the Trailer Park Boys says, away she goes.
It's the way she goes. But now we can't even, like, we can't even say we're an award-nominated podcast anymore. Like, that takes away a lot of our cachet.
It saves a little bit of disappointment, because I don't think we would have been the winners.
No, I think you're 100% right, so, yeah.
Even though we are the best one out there.
Well, it goes without saying.
Duh.
Like, we are the tie. We are like the tie cats at Tim Hortons Field. We're undefeated. Like,
exactly.
It's you know, like you said, we're the best.
8-0.
So nice segue. We're gonna change it up this week, and we're gonna start talking tie cats first. Before we get to Monday's game, which I'm sure we're both very excited about after the big win, I want to talk about Brandon Banks being fined last week for his unnecessary roughness penalty against Saskatchewan. That was a fine worthy play.
It was interesting. He maybe they thought that he came in high on the hit. Maybe it was like a little bit of a helmet to helmet hit. I'm not sure, but I've never seen anyone get fined for, you know, a late hit like that.
No, it was a stupid play, and we discussed it last week and all that stuff, and I guess I saw the news the press release. I was kind of stunned. Like I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss for words, honestly, because I never in a million years suspected that would be a fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was pretty shocked to see it on Twitter, but it is what it is, I guess. You know, you just can't be throwing those big hits like after the play, I guess.
I guess, but like if that's a fine, like wait, I'm curious to see who gets fined from Monday's game. You know what I mean? Like, there were a lot of, you know, little scuffles and brouhahas in that one, as is always the case when Hamilton and Toronto meet. But yeah, there were some things in that one that were, to me, from sitting in the stands, looked a lot worse than what Banks did against Saskatchewan.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see if there is any fines, because there was a couple scuffles and things going on during that game.
Yeah, so let's talk about that game. Like you said, 8-0 at Tim Hortons Field now. The Ticats, as far as I saw, pretty much were in control of that game from start to finish. I was never really worried that the Argos were going to make any sort of comeback. They beat them, I believe the final was 34-18. I think it was a pretty, you know, solid win for the Tabbies.
Yeah, they jumped up to that, I think it was 14-0 lead early. You know, I was a little worried when the Argos made it 14-7, because Harris looked really good. I think he was 4-for-4 on that drive, and he marched down the field really well. But you're right. Before that and then after that, it was pretty much completely Hamilton's ball game.
As soon as the game got into the fourth quarter, and we had seen all those stats going into this game about how Hamilton had like 4 shutouts in the fourth quarter in their 6 regular season games. They'd never been outscored in the fourth quarter in any of their home games. I was at ease, really. They made all the plays that they needed to make. You know what I mean? Whatever the Argos did, they countered. Like you said, you were worried when it went to 14-7, but the Ticats, not long after that, marched down and made it 21-7. So it seemed like no matter, they got out to the lead, and then sort of just everything else was punch, counterpunch, and because they already had the big lead, it was pretty much game over.
Yeah, it was a great game for the Ticats. You know, it was interesting to see the onside punt very early on in the game. Like, I saw it coming, you know, we saw that play a couple times last year against Montreal, I believe, and you could see them lined up onside, and, you know, I thought I'm not sure. I didn't think it was going to work this time because the, you know, the Ticats have shown that a couple times last year. So, but yeah, the Argos just looked clueless, and Stewart picked it up and just walked into the end zone pretty much.
It was genius. We were watching it, like, again, being in the stands. It was, you know, you and I are going to get, you know, this is kind of neat because we're going to have different perspectives on the game. I saw, like, could see everything. You see what the camera shows. But they were running around behind him, and it was like, oh, they're going for the onside punt. The winds were not necessarily massive, but there were winds going that way. And when they ran it, I was like, oh, this is okay. They're going to try to steal a possession here. And Brandon Stewart came down untouched. No one blocked him. And the I don't know who was returning the punt for the Argos. I couldn't catch a number. But he just stood there. Stewart scoops up the ball. The flag goes down, as it always will. And he's in the end zone, and we're all in the stands going, he was on, like, screaming. He's onside, and we're all, you know, doing the no flag wave. And there were guys beside me, like, doing the throw the flag down because there's no flag on the play. And then, you know, they did because, you know, it was the right call. And that place just went nuts. Like, it was – Jeff Reinbold really needs to be given credit for what he has done with this special teams unit. Every game he comes up with something new. This special teams unit has been one of the best, if not the best, in the entire league since he has taken over. And I don't think he deflects a lot of the praise to the players, but the things he designs and the plays he calls, he knows exactly when to do what he needs to do.
Yeah, he's been great since he's been here. You know, the blocking schemes have been great. There's been a lot of touchdown returns. And the little trickeries that he does is great too, you know, with the onside punts. I don't see anyone else doing that in the league. So, you know, and every time they've tried it, it's worked, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, he has been, you know, just awesome since he's been here. And, you know, there's some question about it kind of looked like the Argos player's knee touched Brandon Stewart's helmet when he was down, so he should have been down at the 20-yard line, but, you know, it was, you know, if the guy doesn't touch him with his hands when he's down on the ground, I don't think he should be down. You know, well, it's like totally by accident that he touched him.
Well, here's the thing. You know, there was the lightning delay, so during that, people I was with, one of them started scrolling through Twitter, and we saw a tweet that said Milt Stegall had said, yeah, he was down by contact. Here's the thing. And, you know, we can complain about this stuff till the cows come home, but they review every scoring play anyway.
Mm.
If it was, you know, definitively that he was touched, whether his helmet grazed this guy's knee or what have you, they would have called him down. It obviously wasn't definitive, therefore it was a score.
No, I saw the replay, and you could see his helmet touch his knee or whatever it
really?
Was. Yeah, like, but I don't.
Then how did they miss that?
I don't know. That's what Stegall was talking about. He was talking about the command center missing it. So, yeah, you know, it was, I guess it's the rule, but, you know, the Argo player had no intention of touching him. He was just clueless on the play. So I didn't, you know, obviously I don't have a problem with it because it was a touchdown, but yeah, I guess he should have been down if you're going by the rule book.
Okay. Well, yeah. Anyway, it goes down in the history books as a touchdown, and,
yeah,
you know, just like that Fred Stamps catch a few weeks ago. You know, sometimes they catch them, sometimes they don't, and it turned out in our favor, so I'm not going to really complain, although I would be blasting it if it didn't, but,
yeah, you know,
that's a story for another day. Mm-hmm. You used the word awesome earlier, and speaking of awesome, those third and one stops that they had late in that game, the amount of times that this defensive line and this defensive unit has stopped teams on these sneak plays with one yard to go, it's reaching almost double digits. They did it three in a row against Montreal a few weeks ago. I think they did it twice against Calgary in the first game. Now they have two more in this game. Teams are going to really have to start wondering if they are going to go for it on third and a yard against this Ticats team.
Yeah, they did it. They stopped them right at the start of the second half, and then they did it late in the game. You know, the D-line has been great doing that. You know, they haven't necessarily been great on the pass rush this year, although I think that's getting better as we go along here. But that middle of the defensive line and the linebackers coming in to make this stuff has just been great. And, you know, like you said, teams are going to have to stop going for it on third and short because they're getting stuffed every time.
It's such a momentum swing. Yeah. And it's those little things that, and then the Ticats will, you know, even if they get a field goal off that, you have essentially stolen a drive from the other team because those third ones are supposed to be automatic. And it's hardly been automatic against Hamilton in 2015.
Yeah, especially with the yard off the ball in the CFL. I mean, teams should be able to get a yard, and they just can't do it against the Ticats. So kudos to the defensive front for making all those stuffs.
Yeah,
I think the Argos had four turnovers on downs. So, you know, they weren't all stuffs, but the defense is just great this year.
Yeah, it's one of those units that they've been really good since Kent Austin arrived, but they all really know this system that Orlando Steinhauer has in. And while I will give the nod to Edmonton as having probably the best defense in the CFL right now, Hamilton's not far behind. And when they meet up in Commonwealth in a few weeks, that is going to be a hard-hitting affair.
Yeah. You know, hopefully it's not really low scoring, but, you know, with those two defenses, you never know.
Yeah. But that's for another time. Let's keep talking about this one. What did you I was going to talk about Anthony Woodson for a second, but I guess we have to talk about the reason why we're talking about Anthony Woodson, and that is the injuries to C.J. Gable and Andy Fantuz. For everyone listening at home, I was, you know, at the stadium, as I've said now three or four times. So I was texting Mike to be like, hey, let me know if they say anything on the TV about what happened. And so what did you hear from the people at TSN when you're watching the game about the injuries to those two guys?
Well, you know, at halftime, I think Rod Smith said that it wasn't as bad as first anticipated. And then Suter said the same thing late in the third quarter. So, you know, I don't know why they say those things if they don't really know. Because Austin said after the game that it was, like, really bad. So, and it looked terrible on TV. You know, they showed the replay once or twice. And it looked like, you know, either a broken arm or a busted elbow. You know, his arm bent in, and he was screaming in pain on the field. So, you know, it doesn't look good, in my opinion. I think, you know, if not a season-ending injury, he's going to be out for a long stretch of time, I believe. It's just terrible, you know. It just may be one of those guys that has bad luck, you know. You know, he had that full season the first year he was here, and then after that, he just had a lot of bad luck with the injuries.
Yeah, just like Jesse Lumsden did when he was here, just couldn't stay healthy, and it'd be a shame because he could be a great player if he was able to just stay off the injured list. Now the hit though that knocked him out, like, it looked bad, like his body was twisted and. We watched him walk off the field, and he was hunched over. We all thought it might be a back injury just because of how he was being taken off the field. Like we did not think it looked good, and we're kind of surprised. I was kind of surprised when you texted me and it said, like, oh, they don't think it's as bad as initially thought. And, like, obviously we'll get word later this week, and we will probably talk about it on next week's show, depending on, you know, the extent of the injuries. But Fantuz as well, like, another guy who, you know, just – never seems to be able to put a full season together. Hasn't played a full season since he's been here in Hamilton. And a guy who is just it seems like, again, just snake bit. They didn't really show a replay of his injury in the stadium. They did show Gable's because he had the ball. What happened with Fantuz? What did you see?
Well, the replay showed that he was just, you know, he was cutting to the outside on his route, and he just slipped and fell on his arm. And it looked like, you know, it looked like he hurt his elbow as well. And, you know, I'm kind of worried that he's going to be out for a long period of time as well. And, you know, two of our best players that went on the field are, you know, two of the best in the league, just can't seem to stay healthy. So it's really frustrating, and I feel bad for both of them.
Yeah, same here. I don't worry so much about the injuries because of how talented this team is, but how much better they are with those two guys on the field. Like, it's at some point, can we go through a season without one of our guys suffering a major injury? It seems like, you know, we just get Luke Tasker back. We just get Eric Norwood back. Ted Laurent comes back after missing one game. And now, you know, the team looks to be fully healthy, or as close to fully healthy as they've been, you know, almost ever. And what, Gable gets hurt after what, two carries, I think. And, you know, it's getting exhausting. Every week it seems like someone else goes down, and you know, it's not doom or gloom because this team's now, you know, in a tie for first place, and they've dealt with injuries before and, you know, got to back-to-back Grey Cups. But, man, it would just be nice to see these guys, you know, play together for 16 to 18 games just to see what they could do, because these guys have the makings of a dominant team. If all these players are healthy, like the talent on this roster is second to none, as far as I'm concerned, and everything they do, they've been doing without their stars, and it's a what if scenario. And like you said, I feel bad for both these guys, and I hope they both have speedy recoveries. I don't really know what else we can really say about it, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, it just
sucks. That's all it is.
It does suck.
But out of the suckage comes some non-suckage? I don't know. I lost myself there. Anthony Woodson, I was really impressed when he came in for Gable, the way he ran. I got, you know, 10 carries for 54 yards, and, you know, he hits the hole hard.
He's got good speed.
Got good speed. He was dragging tacklers with him. If Gable's going to miss extended time, as we suspect, and... you know, Hamilton's Canadian ratio depth is pretty good. Woodson can start, and you can have an American backing him up. He's, as far as I'm concerned, if Gable misses Sunday's game, as we all suspect he will, against Winnipeg, I'm rolling Anthony Woodson out there as a starting tailback.
Yeah, I thought he looked great. You know, he's not TJ Gable, but I think that he can be a good replacement. You know, I haven't seen him play much before this. I guess he was with Toronto, but I don't think he saw much playing time. So, yeah, like, I'm sure he's not the blocking back that Gable is, but the way he was running, I was really impressed. So, and he can add to the Canadian ratio as well. And, you know, I saw some things on Twitter that people were saying, you know, get Grigsby back. I don't know.
I saw that too.
I don't know if that's going to happen or not. You know, we've seen players get cut and then get called back, like, you know, a couple days later. It's happened before, but. You know, I think that they should give this kid a chance.
I don't think they need to call him Nick Grigsby. I've gone on record as being a pretty big Nick Grigsby fan. But no, watching the way Woodson ran last night and his versatility, he's a good pass catcher as well. There was a lot of talk in the offseason about possibly, you know, using him in the slot a little bit after Spencer Watt went down, like maybe using him as a receiver. So he's got pass catching ability. He's a special teams, but he plays special teams. That's where he kind of made his hay in Toronto, was on like coverage units and stuff like that. So I remember when he signed here and then the rumors came out that he was making like 110K or something. I was like, that seems a little ridiculous, but he looks like he's going to be worth it. He's, you know, like I said, I think he should be the starting tailback going forward. And if last night's any indication, you know, 5.4 yards a carry is nothing to sneeze at.
No. Yeah, I really liked what I saw from him. You want to talk about Claros a bit?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, he was on fire to start the game. I think his first incompletion was with, you know, 6 minutes left in the second. So, you know, his numbers overall were 21 to 27 and 229 yards, 3 touchdowns. The guy, you know, no interceptions, so he strung 2 games in a row together that really impressed me.
He's efficient. Yeah. He's, you know, there was a lot of talk about how he, you know, had the most 300-yard passing games last year, and that's, some, you know, something to hang your hat on, but he just seems like this year it's more about not necessarily going for big yardage, but going for the right yardage. I know that might sound silly, but he's extending plays with his feet. Toronto had a pretty decent pass rush against him yesterday. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of plays where he was like, the read wasn't there, so he had to scramble, and he found guys. Like on the first Bakari Grant touchdown, I believe it was, or maybe it was a Terrence Tolliver one. No, it was the Grant touchdown.
Grant, yeah.
He rolls out, and Grant's wide open in the back of the end zone. Boom, nails him. He's had his share of bad games. He wasn't, you know, super great against Montreal or all that effective really against Calgary. But again, as the season goes on, he just gets more and more comfortable in this offense. And to be perfectly honest with you, he is starting to make a move as being considered the best quarterback in the league. Maybe people think that's crazy, but very few guys have played consistently as good as he has this season, even with a couple of hiccup games. Quarterback play has been kind of scattershot. I've enjoyed everything Kolaris has done, especially these last two games. He has been magnificent.
Yeah, and, you know, getting Tasker back, I think, helps the situation, too. Like, they have a chemistry there that they built from last year. Tasker comes in as 7 catches for 73 yards. So, you know, with Fantu's going down, Tasker comes in, and I think he's a great addition, and I'm really excited about what he can do moving forward this season.
Yeah, same here. Another guy we got to touch on in that receiving core, we mentioned him a little bit earlier, is Bakari Grant. He is playing with, like, he's got a fire in his belly, like 2 touchdowns last night. And that second one, the corner route into the back of the end zone was a thing of beauty. Yeah. Beat his man off the line, had a step on him the entire way. Kolaris just dropped it in there. Just awesome. And I think we've both talked about when he re-signed earlier this year. We're both big Bakari Grant fans. So seeing him sort of step up and become like a much more reliable receiver, he might be there, like with Fantu's out, he might be their best guy. I know, you know, Tasker gets a lot of love, and, you know, you said his numbers and they were really good. Grant just seems to be able to, you know, produce like every time he's out there.
Yeah. You know, his numbers weren't monster or anything, like, but 3 catches for 47 yards, you know, 2 touchdowns, that's pretty great, but the yards wise. But yeah, he's just making plays. He's putting points up on the board for the team, so he's been doing great. And, you know, I thought that maybe Underwood would have a huge year, one of the new receivers, but Tolliver has been just outstanding as well.
He has been.
I'm going all over the place here, but I don't know what's going on with Sinkfield. I mean, I thought he was playing great the first couple games, and then all of a sudden he's not in the lineup.
Was he one of the was he one of the 2 scratches? Yes. I believe he was on him, and who was the other one? Do you know?
I forget, but I know that Sinkfield was one.
He
of
was
the
one
scratch.
Of them. Yeah, I was kind of surprised because I thought with, you know, McDuffie being out of the lineup, he might be back there just to be a second returner. But I think they had Junior Collins out there.
Yep.
With Banks on punts and kickoffs. So. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I thought Sinkfield was playing really well during the early parts of season two. I mean, you know, Tasker wasn't in the lineup, so that kind of played with the starting receiving core a little bit. So I don't know. I'm kind of all over the place in this one, but yeah, I thought he had performed decently over the course of the season, and it is a little surprising that he's not in the lineup. Although to be fair, Tolliver, out of all sort of the, I guess you would call them second tier receivers. Like, you got your Fantuses, your Grants, and your Taskers. Those are kind of like, those are your veteran top of the list guys. Tolliver has been super impressive and has earned every single second of playing time he's got.
Yeah, he had that one push off penalty early on in the game, which was,
yeah,
he did push off.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely did. We saw it in the stands. No question, that was a push off. And he didn't need to. The thing is, if he would have just gone up, and I said this to the guys I was sitting with, if he would have just gone up, he might have actually drawn a DPI penalty because the DB just threw his hands up and wasn't really looking at the ball based on what I saw. Yeah. And I don't think the push-off really mattered. I think he would have caught – he jumps higher than him. I think he would have caught it anyway.
Yeah, he's a tall guy, so I think he could have brought that in him by himself. But, you know, he had that penalty, but he bounced back with a couple of really nice plays later on in the game. So
it had it, you know, had that – nice touchdown, beat his man, kind of bounced off a guy and scored. So,
yeah.
Players are going to take penalties. It happens. I was actually kind of impressed. I know at the end of the game, I was surprised that Hamilton had so many penalties. I thought they were really disciplined, except kind of near the end. I guess there were a couple 15-yarders. There was a roughing the passer call that, again, it's hard to see. Yeah, it's hard to see in the stands because I tend to follow the ball because that's where you're – I maybe – that's just where the eyes go. You know what I mean? I'm following the play. They flew the flag, and I saw Harris down, and I was like, okay, I guess it's a roughing the – but they never show a replay, so I didn't really know. This is where, you know, you being able to watch on TV comes in handy, so I can kind of get that, you know, second perspective. It obviously, fans are going to boo a play like that because, like, they would boo any play, but to have that called, and I don't know if you remember it, but the Brandon Banks got hit out of bounds on a punt return,
yeah,
and there was no flag, and they went to a TV timeout, and Ken Austin did the old, like, point is, like, did the whole come over here with the finger thing, and I couldn't hear him, but it sure looked like he was lighting into the referee, and he was doing the old Robert De Niro from Meet the Parents thing with the eyes, like, pointing at his eyes with two fingers, like, basically, like, I saw it, how come you didn't see it? I can see it. We're up there kind of chuckling, because it's like, he's kind of giving him the business, but, to get back to, I thought the Ticats, played a pretty clean game, all things considered.
There could have been less penalties on them, but the Argos were just through the roof in penalties. I mean,
yeah,
they really hurt them in that game. Just, you know, a couple weeks ago when I was watching the game, you know, Austin really lays into the referees sometimes. You know?
Yeah.
The ref came over and he's like, get your effing finger out of my face, and you know, it's pretty humorous. I don't know, like, I'm not gonna call out the integrity of the refs, but I don't know, like, if a coach laying into them like that week after week, you know, if they lean any way in calls against the team, you know,
it probably doesn't help.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where he'll do it and he'll take the hit. As opposed to his players, I understand why he does it. He's an emotional guy. I think that's maybe even an understatement. he's fiery and he's successful. So whatever he does works. If he wants to scream at a ref, he can scream at a ref. I'll let him do it.
Yeah, I find it quite amusing. The Argos really hurt themselves with the penalties, and you know, I mean, if they want to do that, then you know. They can, I don't have a problem with it.
You know what? Neither do I. You know what else I don't have a problem with? The complete disappearance act of Chad Owens last night.
Yes. You got to get used to being the, you know, fourth option, because there's new blood in town, and they're a talented bunch. So he's falling down the pecking order in Toronto.
Yeah. I never, ever, ever cheer for a player to get hurt.
No.
But that hit, I think it knocked him out of the game, honestly. Yeah. I think it was a tandem hit by Norwood and Lawrence. Oh, yeah. My God. beautiful. Just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. I enjoyed that quite a bit. You know, don't want to see him hurt, but that was
a perfectly legal hit. It's a perfectly legal hit.
Yeah, Lawrence came in there and really, really gave him a good jolt.
Yeah, and like you said, so many talented receivers in Toronto now, these youngsters. I think it's time that we maybe stop talking about Owens. He's not an elite, you know, top-level receiver anymore. I know I don't like, you know, Hazelnut, but, man, he had a great game.
Yeah, he was really good, and, you know, Kevin Elliott's making some noise, and Gurley's a good receiver as well. So, yeah, Owens is he's just not the number one option anymore, and on punt returns, he's not getting it done either as much as he used to. So I guess he's getting up there in age, and that's going to happen.
Absolutely. Another guy I'd like to talk about from the Ticats, Donald Washington.
Yeah, the third.
Oh, the third. Oh, yeah. Well, he's joins a good company with Arlan Bruce, the third.
Yes.
I believe he's in Delvin Bro's old spot, and I have been really, really impressed with him his first two games. I think the Saskatchewan game was the first game he played. He sometimes gets beat in coverage, and that's going to happen, but the sack that he had on Trevor Harris, Jamal Johnson-esque is how I described it.
That's
just perfect and clean, and whew, everyone jumping and slapping hands, and oh, just beauty. And that one pass defense or near interception he had in the end zone on one of the Argos' last drives. He is I hesitate to say he could be like Bro because Delvin Bro was on a completely other, like just worlds better than most guys who come in here, especially as rookies and second year players and what have you. But I really like what they have in Donald Washington, and I think he can be a player going forward.
Yeah, I think he's going to be, you know, he can fill in that spot for Bro. You know, he's like you said, he's not Bro, but he's been impressing in his first couple of games. And, you know, I saw that sack coming before it happened. You know, Harris didn't have a clue, and he came in there and, you know, he didn't raise his helmet to make an illegal hit or anything. It was just a nice, clean hit.
Shoulder right to the chest. Perfect.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Harris didn't fumble on that one because he just had no clue it was coming. So, yeah, I hope that he's the guy that fills that spot and, you know, makes a name for himself in the secondary.
I remember last week, I couldn't really see this week because, you know, my view's not, you know, crystal clear anymore. I'm getting older. My eyesight's kind of fading on me. What, did you get a chance to look at his hands? Did he have the taped fingers again? Not sure.
I'm not sure. I didn't.
Okay, because he had the taped fingers against Saskatchewan, and I saw that, and I was like, that is a guy who likes to hit. I think it was Chad Johnson who once said in interviews, like, if you see a DB who's not wearing gloves, he's out there to try to kill you. And he compared it to Sean Taylor, the sadly deceased former Miami Hurricane and Washington Redskin player. He was a safety, and he taped his fingers, and everyone who ever played against him said that he hit like a truck. He was just vicious. So I saw that, and I was like, oh, he's going to lay someone out. And that was last week against Saskatchewan, and then this week he has that beautiful sack, and I'm quickly becoming a huge fan of his.
Yeah, you know, one of the question marks going into the season was the secondary, but I think that we might have found the right pieces that give us a pretty strong secondary this season.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't, like, we've complained about the secondary before, and now we're kind of, you know, talking about it being pretty decent, and they gave up, like, almost 400 yards passing last night because not just to Harris, Mitchell Gale ended up coming in near the end of the game after it was already out of reach. Yeah. And a lot of those, you know, I think 80 or 85 yards of those were the garbage yards on the last Argo touchdown of the night where Hamilton was essentially playing prevent defense. The game was essentially in hand. Like, it didn't – nothing was – like, the Argos weren't going to make a comeback.
No.
But, yeah, it's surprising when, you know, we're sitting here, you know, kind of, you know, lavishing praise on a unit that gave up nearly 400 yards through the air.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of yardage given up, yes, but they weren't allowing a lot of – you know, they had one touchdown pass from Harris, but other than that, they were, you know, the old Rich Stubler when he was with the Argos, you know, bend, don't break, defense kind of thing. So, you know, I don't want to see a lot of yardage given up, but if they give it up and don't allow touchdowns, then, you know, that's great.
Yeah, and the thing also is they didn't really give up any big plays. There were no, like, 50-yard catches by any Argos receivers. The run game, you know, was next to nothing, as you know, but
that's as usual,
par for the course, exactly. Yep. So, you know, they give up a lot of yards through the air simply because teams can't run the ball, would be my sort of estimation. And it is the CFL, and, you know, they have the new rules where you can't touch a guy after 5 yards. So you're going to see a lot more passing yards, a lot higher, you know, completion percentages and what have you. But, yeah, I'm just super impressed with the defense as a whole, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah. You know, we got the talent on the field, and and the coach is making the scheme, so I think we're pretty good when it comes to defense.
Yeah. Anything else from last night's game you want to touch on?
I don't think so. You know, just overall great performance. You know, it sucks that Fantuzen and Gable went down, but a great game and a really big win for the Ticats. You know, now we're tied for first in the East at 3-2.
And, you know, two more home games coming up before they hit the road again, and now's the chance for them to sort of separate themselves from the rest of the East, because this East looks like it's going to be a dogfight till the end of the year.
Yep, a real chance to be, you know, Winnipeg's a good team, so is BC, but those are two winnable games, so a chance to, you know, get some separation, be 5-2 by the time that they go on the road to Edmonton.
Yeah, this was my biggest worry game of this sort of homestand that's coming up, these five home games in the next next 6 weeks. Because Toronto had played so well. I know we hate the Argos and all that, but I'm not going to deny the fact that they had looked, you know, pretty impressive during their, you know, four-game road trip to start the season. I know, you know, the first game in Fort Mac was considered a home game, but that's, you know, that's hogwash. That was a road game. They're playing in Alberta. They're from Ontario. Mm-hmm. That's a road game, no matter how you, no matter what the schedule says.
Yeah.
So this to me was the first was the only home game, and I'm not trying to discount Winnipeg or BC or Montreal or the, you know, the teams they're going to play at home. But this was my biggest worry home game where a loss could happen until Labor Day, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, with Toronto being 3-1, you know, going into tough places to play and winning, you know, I was worried as well. But, you know, they shut them down and, you know, they looked okay, but not as good as they did in Saskatchewan and other places they were in.
Absolutely. So I guess we got to talk about our bold predictions. We'll end with that, the segment with that. You had Norwood for 3 sacks and a forced fumble, and yeah. You got the forced fumble.
Yeah, and I guess it was considered a sack too, so he had 1 sack.
He had 1 sack and 1 forced fumble. I'm just impressed that you nailed the forced fumble. Yeah. Forced fumbles, that's a hard thing to predict.
Yeah, as soon as it happened, I was like, forced fumble.
Yeah,
forced fumble.
I'm giving you a half point on that. I don't care if anyone has a problem with it. Predicting a guy to get a forced fumble, and not just that the team would get one, but that you picked the guy that would get it. You're getting half credit. I'm giving it to you.
Oh yeah.
Mine was the Ticats would hold the Argos to 250 total yards under 20 points, and I got half of that right. They held them to 18, but the Argos went for over 400 yards of offense, which surprised me when I heard it at the end of the game. I felt like the Cats defense didn't give up that much, but lo and behold, they did. I'm not going to give myself half credit point for holding under 20 points, because I believe the number going into the game in the 6 regular season contests that the Ticats had played at Tim Hortons Field was 12.5 or 12.6 points per game given up. I didn't know that when I made my prediction, mind you, but so be it.
I'll give you a half star.
You're going to give me a half star?
Yeah.
All right, I'll take it. If you're going to give it, I'll take it.
Good.
I was still, when he got that four, I hate to keep harping on it, but when he got that fourth fumble, I was like, holy shit, he got it right.
Yeah, I know. I was like double checking. That was Norwood, right? That was Norwood. Yeah, it was.
All right, so let's move on to some CFL talk. I guess the big news of the week, and really the only news of the week, was that weird report from Gary Lawless that said the Riders are going to fire Corey Chamberlain. And then Brendan Tamman had his news conference yesterday and said they're not going to fire him. He's their coach till the end of the season, or we're riding with him till the year's over. I can't remember the exact quote. But to me, that just tells me that they're both going to be gone unless they turn this thing around.
Yeah, and they're going to have a tough time turning it around there. I mean, you know, with Glenn in the offense, they look pretty good. You know, Brett Smith had one game. You can't judge him by one game, but I don't think that this offense is going to get to the way they were playing earlier in the season, and the defense has just been horrific. So, you know, Tamman and Chamberlain were there when they won the Grey Cup that year. Maybe that was just they brought in a lot of veteran players and they got lucky, but, you know, you're right. You could see both of them gone by the end of the season.
Yeah, I've never been a big Corey Chamberlain guy. I don't think he was, and I think we've talked about this before, so we're probably just retreading on topics we've already covered, but I wasn't super impressed with him as a defensive coordinator when he was in Hamilton. And it was a bit of a surprise hire for me. I know Brendan Tamman nearly hired him before when they hired Greg Marshall in 2011. That's the guy he wanted. And if he was to have fired Chamberlain, this would have been – he would be on his third coaching hire, and general managers usually don't get that many, especially because it's not like he's been super successful. Yes, he won a Grey Cup as a general manager, and yeah, I'm not trying to take that away from them. But since then, you know, I think they're something like 2-13 in their last 15 games.
Mm.
And I know injuries have, you know, decimated that team, but injuries have decimated the team that we cheer for here in Hamilton, and they have still found a way to compete and win games. The Riders just don't seem to have any depth, especially amongst their Canadians. Their Canadian depth is atrocious.
Yeah, they. You're right. Like, if the starters go down, they don't seem to have, you know, good replacements like in Hamilton. You know, our defensive line has been, you know, two injuries in the middle with Gadosh and got me out here.
Bulky,
yeah. So, and they've been doing great in the middle. So, you know, they just don't have the depth there, and that's got to lay on Brendan Tamman, the GM. So, you know, I said earlier in an earlier podcast that I thought that Chamberlain had a lot of a long leash, but it's just falling apart so badly there that they could be both gone. So, you know, tough times in Saskatchewan right now.
Indeed, indeed. Let's move on to the games of the week, the rest of the games of the week in the CFL. It started off on Thursday night with Winnipeg's win over BC. Andrew Harris, even in a loss, keeps trying to make you eat your words, man. 24 carries for 117 yards and 4 catches for 50 yards. No touchdowns this week, but at this point in the season, despite BC's record, he might be my front runner for most outstanding player. He has been awesome.
Yeah, he's been great. He's been great. You know, Lule started off hot again in this game and then kind of fizzled off as the game went along. You know, he had 3 picks. You know, he just has to, Lule has to, Harris has been awesome, and I'll admit that. You know, 117 yards on the ground, 50 yards receiving. He's been a dual threat the whole season. I've been really impressed with him. But Lule seems to start off hot and then fizzles. So he needs to tie a whole game together for me to change.
I think that start off hot is an understatement. That 14-play, 8-plus-minute drive was a thing of beauty. I watched that and I was thinking, oh my God, BC is going to run all over this team. Like, they just, he could do no wrong. Like, everything was working. But then after that, it was almost like they just fell off the map and Winnipeg just, you know, chipped away. And, you know, full credit to the Bombers for the victory.
Yep. You know, they're not, another week where Willie looked like he might not play and he comes in and, you know, looks like he wasn't hurt at all. So, you know, Drew Willie's been great this year when he's been in there. So, you know, without Willie, Winnipeg drops off the map. So he's just a huge component to that team.
I was just about to say that. They are just a different team with him behind center. He
was running, sorry to interrupt you, but he was running the ball too, you know, 72 yards rushing. So,
yeah,
he's a great player.
Yep. They just seem to feel more confident when he's back there. So it's silly to say, but, you know, as go Willie is, that so goes the Bombers, or whatever the hell that saying is.
Yeah, I agree. Some interesting, you know, BC's coach not backing off from the third down gambles either. Yeah, a couple of notes that game, you know, he had one early in the game. I think it was third and very short when they just plunged forward and got the first down. But then he called another one with third and 3 or something it was, and he had the open, Harris was open, and then Lule just made a bad pass and turnover on downs.
I'm sure he's going to, and did, take a lot of crap for those, for his decision. I know he took a lot of crap for the decision the week before. I like that he's, you know, a little bit of a gambler and, you know, showing faith in his offense. Like, he's an offensive guy. He's got George Cortez there, who is a great offensive coordinator. And like you said, on this week, like, the play was there, and, you know, the players just didn't make the play, so... Uh-huh. And it was the same against what was it, Toronto? Yeah, they played Toronto last week. Blue Light fired the ball and Arsenal just dropped it. So I like when coaches aren't afraid to take a chance.
Yeah, so like, you know, the right play call was there. It was executed right, except for the, you know, the throw this week and the catch last week. So, you know, you could argue that the right call was made, just they just didn't make the play.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else stuck out for you from this game?
Yeah, I thought that, you know, the start of the second half, I think BC was up. And Stoudemire had that big return to kick off the start of the second half. And after that, they threw the big TD bomb to Adams and really switched momentum for the Bombers.
Darvin Adams has been pretty impressive the last couple of weeks, hasn't he?
Yeah. Another game over 100 yards. You know, only four catches, but 127 yards and a touchdown. So this kid can make plays, and I've been really impressed with him.
Yeah, it was a good pickup from the Bombers to get him from the Argos. Went kind of, you know, not unreported, but underreported, because he didn't, you know, he wasn't really spectacular in Toronto. But sometimes guys just need, you know, a year, two or three, and maybe just being in the right system to explode. And he's certainly looking like he's going to be in the top of the receiving yards list all season.
Yeah, if Willie stays healthy, then Adams should have a big year, because you know, Moore was out again this week, so he seems to be injured quite a bit. So Adams can step in there and have some big numbers this year, I think.
For sure. You want to move on to the Eskimos and the Riders?
Yeah, let's do it.
Talk about a butt kicking! Holy jeez! What can you really say? Edmonton, you know, dominated that game from start to finish and drops the Riders to 0-6.
Yeah. You know, I was impressed with Nichols this game.
Me too.
I thought he had his best game this season. You know, he started off really hot on the opening drive. He was 5 of 6 and a TD pass to Stafford. So, you know, maybe he's getting used to being the starter and getting some momentum. Overall, now he had 300 yards passing, 2 TDs. His percentages were pretty good. So maybe we're seeing that Nichols can be a good starting quarterback in this league.
Yeah, I don't want to. You know, I'm not bashing the guy, but he did do this against Saskatchewan's defense, which top to bottom is just dog shit. So, I let's see how he.
That's two shits in this episode, Josh. Jeez.
Well, now you just made it three. You know, full credit for his performance. He did play well. I was impressed. It was a great bounce back game from him after being pulled the week before. But I want to see him do it against a much better defense. The only thing is that, you know, the much better defense is the one that he plays with. So maybe, you know, if he's still in there come a couple weeks against Hamilton, that if he can do what he did, or even come close to what he did against Saskatchewan, against Hamilton's defense, then I'll sort of, or if he can maybe, you know, string a couple of games together where he looks good, then I might be more inclined to sort of jump on the bandwagon. But I'm not trying to, you know, diminish what he did against Saskatchewan. He was very, very impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't judge him by one game, I guess. So we'll see how he does in the upcoming weeks. You know, I was really surprised that Saskatchewan didn't run the ball more. I mean, they're a rookie quarterback in there. Why not hand off the ball to Messam or Allen, you know?
Yeah, again, it's kind of like here in Hamilton. It's hard to run on that Edmonton team.
True.
We talked about it earlier. That defense is impressive, but I feel like they didn't even try to run. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah.
They didn't even feel like they tried to establish a run game, and you at least have to give it an opportunity to fail, because you never know. Like, Messam and Allen are good backs and should be able to get a couple of decent carries in there. Like, Saskatchewan scored 5 points. It's hard to score that few points in the CFL game.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand. Like, Chamberlain has made some questionable decisions this year. Why mess him again? Like, last week they barely used him. This week again, only 3 carries for 27 yards. I mean, yeah, he had some receiving yards, 6 catches, but why not hand him the ball more? He was the leading rusher in the league a couple of weeks ago, so I don't understand why they don't give him the ball more.
If I had that answer, I'd be coaching the Rough Riders right now.
Yeah.
So. Honestly, I don't get it either. Like you said, you know, they're starting a rookie quarterback. You rely on your veteran players, and for Messam to have 9 touches, that's ridiculous. Like, that's stupidly low. He should have no less than 15 in any game ever. He started this season on fire, and yeah, I don't know what they're doing over there.
Yeah, and you know, I don't have Allen's numbers written down here, so they couldn't have been that impressive. So you know, I'd be willing to bet that he didn't get the ball that often either. And he's a similar kind of running back to Messam. You know, he's a big dude and he has speed. So, yeah, I don't understand why they're not giving them the ball, especially with the rookie quarterback. But, you know, what do what they want, I guess.
I got Allen's numbers. You want them?
Yeah, sure.
3 carries for 0 yards.
Yeah, so six carries between them, you know, that's just not enough.
No.
With those two backs, so.
Not even close. And, you know, Messam had 3 carries for 27 yards. That's a 9-yard per carry average. Feed him, yeah. Like, that's almost a first down every time he touches the ball. Feed the man the ball. Like, yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, another huge game from Darius Bowman, over 100 yards again. So, there were some questions if he could have a repeat season of last year, and he seems to be, you know, just carrying that over from last season.
Absolutely. And Kenny Stafford, who I like to talk about him because he's on my fantasy team. Also, just so everyone knows, I'm the reverse Riders 6-0 right now in our fantasy league. How'd you do this week, as a side note?
Well, last night I checked it after the game, and it said I won by 1. And I checked it today, and it said I lost by 4. So, yeah, so I, you know, having tough luck this year.
You are. That's like, what, 3 straight losses by a combined, like, 6 points?
Yeah. It's really hurting on the – I have a linebacker that – I just can't find a starting linebacker that's – starts games, so that's really hurting me. But
maybe we'll talk after, because I got quite a few linebackers.
Okay.
Yeah. I completely forgot to swap out Ottawa's quarterbacks this week. I don't know why I had that brain fart, but they're on the bye, so you get the floating quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Who was BC? I got 0 out of Ottawa and still won the game. So
yeah.
That's how talented my team is.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kenny Stafford, that's how we got on this topic.
Yes, yes.
Just, he's really showing that the, you know, bringing him in exchange for Fred Stamps was a smart move.
Just, yeah.
He's a good number 2 receiver.
Yep, he's a talented guy. He's been making plays this year, you know, obviously younger than Fred Stamps, so there could be a future there in Edmonton, so I expect him to become, you know, one of the fan favorites there. You know, as the season goes along, because he's a talented dude.
Yeah, it's sort of similar to Darvin Adams. He in Winnipeg, Stafford didn't get a ton of opportunities in Montreal, in and out of the lineup, injuries or performance related, what have you, and finds a new team who wants him. Clearly, they made a trade to acquire him, and he's just become, you know, one of the league's best, and. I've always liked him. I thought he always had the tools, even when he was in Montreal. I believe, you know, to go back to fantasy, I'm pretty sure I drafted him last year too, on like a whim, sort of like, oh, let's see what he can do, sort of thing, and didn't really impress me. But yeah, I'm just, I guess you could say I'm a big Kenny Stafford fan.
Yeah, I like him as well. But yeah, you want to move on to Montreal versus Calgary?
For sure. Now I need to let everyone know that I didn't really see this game, so Mike's going to do a lot of heavy lifting. I saw most of the first half, and then I went out to watch Ronda Rousey kick the daylights out of that Brazilian girl whose name is completely escaping me right now. So I was at Boston Pizza. They had the game on, but no sound, so I think I left just a little after halftime, and Montreal had the lead. I get to the bar, and Calgary had the lead, and so I'm not really sure how anything happened. I'll just get my 2 points out of the way that I sort of liked from the game, and then you can take it away. Cato impressed me. You know, 20 of 32 for 278, touchdown. And the interception was kind of bad. He just, you know, made a bad read and just tossed it up there. And the other thing is SJ Green, just once again, just beasting out there. 7 catches for 132 and a touchdown. Also on my fantasy team. I just like to throw that in there. So, Mike, take it away. What did you see from this game that I unfortunately didn't see as I watched the rowdy one? Destroy another opponent.
Yeah, you know, just to keep it going with the Cato talk, he continues to impress me. You know, him and Green have a connection there. You know, it seems that Green is turning out huge numbers each week. I think that there's a Cato could really hurt teams if he starts running the ball, because I think he has tremendous speed, and you know, he does that move every time he seems to run the ball, you know, a little zig and a little zag, and he can really break some ankles. So you know, if I think I think Cato should start running the ball a little bit more, and he could add that extra dimension that could really scare some defenses.
He's got to be the front runner for Rookie of the Year, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I don't believe he's ever played an NFL game. I think he actually was in college last year, so he's running away with that award right now, correct? Like, I think we can put that to rest.
Yeah, I think, you know, from the second he came into the game, his first game, he's been impressing, like, everyone. So, you know, I think that Crompton he's not going to be the starter anymore.
Don't think we will ever hear, the only time we'll hear his name again is when he is released. He's done.
Yeah.
Cato has looked better in, what is he now, 4 starts, maybe?
Three or four.
He has looked better in those 4 starts than Jonathan Crompton has ever looked in any game he ever played for the Alouettes.
Yeah, he's, you know, he might be released. He might be back, lifelong backup in the CFL. So he's not starting for any team ever again, I don't think. You know, no. I could be wrong. Someone might take a chance on him, but I don't think he's going to be a starter in the CFL again.
We're wrong a lot of the time. You're not wrong on this one.
Yeah.
Cato is a playmaker at quarterback.
Yeah.
He makes the team better, period. He is not a liability. I always thought Crompton, you know, was a bit of a liability. His completion percentage was not great. His completion percentage, even when he did play earlier this year, I think he was like 5-for-17 in the first game he played, something like stupidly low.
Yeah.
He was what they needed. He was a caretaker quarterback for them last year after they, you know, the Troy Smith experiment failed. But Rakeem Cato is the man there now. And I think I just belched on air. As much as I don't want Montreal to have a competent quarterback because, you know, they're in Hamilton's division and I want them to be terrible, they found themselves a stud in Rakeem Cato. And, you know, there's just nothing we can do about it, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's just a better player than Crompton.
Yep.
Period. So, yeah, Mitchell, you know, Levi Mitchell started off a little bit slow again this game, but I thought that he really picked it up as the game went along. He had really good numbers. 23-32, 330 yards, 2 touchdowns, you know, 33 yards rushing. So, you know, we've talked about him not impressing so far this season, and I think that maybe he's starting to turn a corner and the Stampeders offense will start clicking even without Cornish in the lineup.
Yeah, he's going to have to start making plays without Cornish there because in the little I did see, I don't think Matt Walter was really a huge factor. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, he wasn't. You know, he had 8 carries for 40 yards, which isn't a terrible average, but they brought in this Harrison guy. I think Walter got shook up a bit in the second half. They brought in Harrison. He looked pretty good. 8 carries for 47 yards. So, you know, maybe they have a little tandem there with Walter and Harrison that they can use with Cornish out. So, but yeah, Mitchell's going to have to, I think, do a lot more throwing. And they have the talent to be a pass-first team with their receiving corps.
Yeah. Every week I seem to say something nice about Eric Rogers and he makes me look like he is my Andrew Harris. I said I don't think he would live up to the expectations, and every week he goes out there and more than lives up to the expectations. So, like I said, we're usually wrong, and you know, you were wrong about Andrew Harris, and I was way wrong about Eric Rogers. So,
yeah,
like you said, that receiving core in Calgary is pretty potent. So,
yeah, and McDaniel had a huge game, 7 catches for 126 yards and 2 touchdowns. So, you know, he's just Mr. Reliable. And Calgary, so you know he's not talked a lot about, but he's always there making plays.
Absolutely. Anything else that stood out to you from that game?
You know, Calgary has a lot of injuries on the offensive line. I thought that, you know, it really showed. You know, Calgary's a deep team overall, and I think that the offensive line has done a pretty good job with all the injuries that they've had. So that they've really impressed me with that O line.
Alrighty.
I had to pick on Dobson Collins because
The fumble! I saw the highlight of that.
Yeah, he would just make mistakes all over the field. You know, especially that fumble. He should have walked into the end zone, and he just that really cost Montreal. I think it cost them the game. You know, you can't blame one player or one play, but he was just terrible the whole game, so I had to pick on him a bit.
Good old Drops and Collins. Yes. Seems to be what he's done throughout his career. He was only in because Stamps was out, correct? I believe that's what I kept hearing.
Yes.
So when Stamps is back, he's out of the lineup anyway. So, but yeah, he might have cost them a game. I saw the highlights of that fumble, and yeah, he's tailing in the end zone, and I'm not sure who the Calgary defender was. I think it might have been Keon Raymond who popped it out, or maybe it was Fred Bennett. But yeah, you just can't let that happen.
No. Yeah, it was a big turning point in the game because the Montreal was marching down the field and should have been a touchdown, but. Yeah, I just had to pick on him a bit, and we can move on now.
All right, let's move. Well, we're moving on then to our game preview for Sunday's clash at Tim Hortons Field between our Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Now, normally, at least recently, I've liked to sort of look at offense and defense and, kind of see what they have to do to win. I had a hard time. Now, it's a bit of a short week for myself. I was out last night at the game, and wasn't entirely, I was prepped, but I was having a hard time coming up with what the Cats need to do on offense and defense to win this game. And I'm thinking maybe that's because we've already seen these two teams play, and therefore we know what Hamilton can do against Winnipeg. I guess defensively, I think I'll start there. Limit Drew Willey. If you knock him out of the game again, whatever. But I don't, I never want to see anyone get hurt, like I've said before, but... Yeah, I just maybe, limit Willie's impact on the game and don't let Darvin Adams beat you deep.
Yeah. I mean, continue the run stuffing, take away the run game, continue the red zone defense, good red zone defense play, not allow touchdowns. Keep the turnovers on downs. That's a huge momentum swing if they can get the ball back with turnovers on downs. So, it's tough week to week giving offense and defense, strategies or whatever, because it seems like we're just repeating ourselves.
Exactly. You can kind of get repetitive. Run the ball, throw the ball well, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So
I also thought it might be a little difficult this week too, because as much as we expect both Fantuz and Gable to miss extended periods of time, when we record this, it's Tuesday morning. We have no idea. If we were a Winnipeg podcast a few weeks ago and recording at this time, we'd have been saying, well, Drew Willie's not going to play, so this team's, screwed with Brian Brohm in there. And then, Willie starts and they, So it's kind of hard to, what sort of game plan will the Ticats have offensively if Woodson's in the backfield? And it's hard to predict. It's hard to really come up with something.
Yeah, I just, on offense, it is tough, but I think that they have to continue to run the ball. Gable's going to be out this week. We don't have any. I don't think we can argue that very much. So I think he's going to be out for a while. But continue to run the ball even without him in there. Give Woodson the ball. I think he's capable back. Don't go away from the run game, even though the number one guy isn't in there.
Yep. Oh. Yep. I'm speechless a little bit because I can't really argue or even add anything to that. Perfectly right. So
yeah, I think that you could use some receiver screens as well with that seems to work well with Tasker, and maybe throw in some banks with his speed with the
jet sweeps and
keep Tolliver rolling. He's had some good games strung together, and keep him in the game as well.
Think they'll hang 50 on him?
50. I'm not sure. That's tough.
That's a lot of points, right?
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen again, but, hopefully.
I don't think it'll happen either. Anything else you want to touch on, going into this game? Like I said, I'm just having a hard time sort of figuring things out for this one. I really got nothing. I'm swinging at the wind here. I'm dropping the ball.
I think that maybe... special teams have clued in on how to stop Banks a bit. Last couple games he's been limited, so maybe
he did have a nice return against Toronto early though.
So he's always dangerous, but I like to see him bust a big one back. So yeah, that's about it on the Medlock keeps being money Medlock, so you have no worries about him making field goals back there. So on the special teams wise. So I'd like to see Banks bust a big one back. You know, that'd be nice to see.
I want to see that all the time. I still got that prediction from the start of the season. He'd score 10, and he's gone three games without one, which, you know, I think it wasn't realistic, even in the slightest, think he was going to score 18.
No.
But I tend to find that it's not if they're punting it deep, like they're pinning him back between like the 20 and the end zone on the goal line. That's not when he's going to take one to the house. Those are more their direction. They're angling it away from him, forcing him to the sidelines right away to get the coverage down there. It's the ones where they kick it right down the center of the field when they're punting, when the team's punting from their own like 22-yard line. Those are the ones where he seems to have the most success. So hopefully the Ticats can defense can hold Winnipeg on some of those short drives and, you know, give Banks a lot of field to play with, and then maybe he gets number three.
Hopefully.
So bold prediction time for this week. What do you got?
I hope that you don't have the same one, but I know you always bring two. So I'm, I was really impressed with Woodson. So I'm going to say he has over 100 yards rushing and a TD rushing and receiving. So two TDs for him.
Wow. Okay. Bold. That is bold. That is absolute. That's maybe one of the bolder ones we've had because, you know, he's a guy who's, I'm not sure if he's ever started at tailback in the CFL.
I don't think so.
So, yeah, not bad. I did come with two, so I'll stick with my first one, and that was that Luke Tasker, the son of a former Buffalo Bill player and Pro Bowler Steve Tasker, will have 125 yards or more receiving and a touchdown. Not super bold, but with Fantu's out, I think he's going to see a lot more targets.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Yeah, I like that boldness.
You know, with the late game, Ticats game Monday, we don't have a ton of questions. I got one. I think this might be a first time ever that I've gotten a question on the comment section at Three Down Nation. So, AJ Nolte, I wonder if it's any relation to actor Nick Nolte. That'd be kind of cool, but I doubt it. He asks, what, if any, positions do you think the Ticats might target as NFL training camp cuts start?
You know, that's, you don't see that as much these days, bringing in the NFL cuts. It used to be a thing years ago, but where do they need help, do you think?
I would have said defense in the secondary, but I don't see them. See, the thing is, I guess Justin Hickman was brought in last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, and maybe Brandon Banks was brought in the year before. I think it was around Labor Day when, you know, those cuts are made. I don't think there's going to be, at least if we're talking like star players or like former CFL players, I don't think there's really going to be anyone out there to really bring in. Are they going to look at a running back? Because if you're going to bring a running back in, you might as well just bring Grigsby back. You know what I mean? Because he's familiar with the system and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I would have said defensive back earlier, but you know, the secondary sort of, you know, coming together, and you don't really want to add guys to that mix because it can kind of mess with chemistry.
Yeah.
Maybe they bring a couple guys up to put them on the practice roster to get a look at them for next year for training camp. But I don't think there's anyone out there that, like, I don't think the team has very many needs, honestly. So I don't really see anyone kind of coming up. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that you're going to see anyone signed and be like a starter this season, but I could see them maybe signing some guys for the future because Austin's always looking ahead. You know, like we saw with they signed the kicker this week.
Yes,
with Medlock being on the last year of his contract. So yeah, I could see them bringing in some guys maybe on the practice roster for future consideration. But I don't think you're going to see guys in the starting lineup from NFL cuts.
No. I guess, you know, Sean Lemon, I think, was just recently released by the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a beast last year for the Calgary Stampeders. I think if any of these, like, former CFL players get released, I think a lot of them are just going to end up going back to their old teams anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they get back here, it's not like you can really, you know, you don't really want to. Football's not like baseball with trade deadlines and basketball, where you can kind of just throw a guy in there and they mesh really quickly. Like, if you're not there at the beginning of the season, it's really hard for you to sort of adapt and fit in with the club. So, yeah, I feel like I'm just repeating myself over and over again. But, yeah, I don't really see anyone coming up here.
Yeah, we're in agreement on that one.
Do you got any questions?
Yeah, I got two here. At USFL Tecmo, how could Toronto not have drilled the onside rule into their special teams players? Yeah, I'm just, I guess he's referring to the
onside punt.
Yeah.
They're not the only team that has been, we talked about it earlier, they're not the only team that's been burned by that from Hamilton. It is a little weird that maybe just because they get it drilled in their head so much that no one could touch you anyway, so yeah. You're used to the cushion. It's kind of hard to not know. I can't believe there wasn't a coach screaming on the sidelines, like, watch it, like, because they were running around back and forth, like, trying to disguise it, sort of, but not, yeah. But being a bit obvious that they were going to use it. I can't believe there wasn't someone saying, like, they're going onside, like, onside player, like, screaming at it. To,
mm-hmm.
Maybe they couldn't hear, maybe they were, I don't know, but I think it's just a product of having it drilled in their head that they do get 5 yards, that's why it was there. Now, for who was returning the punt for Toronto anyway, do you know?
I think it might have been A.J. Jefferson, but okay. I'm not positive.
Why he wouldn't then just touch Brandon Stewart regardless of what happens? Mm-hmm. Like, because that's a foot, like, there's a, even if he's going to get the 5 yards, and you're watching this guy run down, and you know he can't pick up the ball, so it was smart of him not to, like, try to touch it himself, because it could have just been a regular fumble as opposed to an onside recovery. Yep. Just touch the guy down, because, you know, in foot, he stopped and looked up. Like, he wasn't playing, like, you didn't hear a whistle, so the play's, like, do what you're supposed to do, play to the whistle, and if he would have touched him, he would have printed a touchdown. Not that Hamilton, you know, might not have scored anyway, but I don't know. It was kind of a bonehead play by him, just not to be, not necessarily that he wasn't aware of the rule, but that he just wasn't, like, aware of, like, where he was in the game.
Yeah, they really caught Toronto with their pants down there. I mean, I guess, you know, the American players come up and they have to be, they probably get the no yards rule pounded into their head so much that they're just not worried about that kind of thing. But going forward, I think when teams play Hamilton, they're going to be like in the study rooms, they're going to be like, hey, be aware of this, because Hamilton uses this, you know, quite a bit now. So
especially at home, like the wins at Tim Hortons. I know people used to talk about the wins at Iverwind Stadium being unpredictable. The wins at Tim Hortons Field are just as wild. At one point last night, the flags from the goalposts were. One was flying in, and the other was flying in. They were both, you know, going in the opposite direction on us. It's like, how the hell does that happen?
Yeah, so they got that funny swirling winds there.
Exactly. So you're right. Teams are going to be drilling this. They just watch for it. They don't use – I think this was the first time they used it all season. Granted, it was the first home game they had all season.
Mm.
And obviously it was in the game plan, because I believe it was the first punt of the game that they did it on, if I'm not mistaken.
It was.
So this was a design going into the game if – depending on where we are on the field, what we're doing, we're going to try this. And, yeah, you're right. Going forward, teams are going to have to be aware of what the Ticats like to do. And, again, want to praise Jeff Reinbold. Guy is just doing it all right, and I love him.
Yep. So last question here is at Shiny Beast. I like that Twitter name. It's pretty neat. With Gable and Fantu's injuries, how can Speedy deal with smothered coverage? You know, I don't know, if, even with those injuries, you know, Speedy's not a running back, obviously, but with the Fantu's injury, I don't think he's going to see much more playing time in the offense anyways. So, you know, he's the smothered coverage thing, you know, I guess he just have to use his speed that he has to break away, but I don't think he'll see much more time in the offense anyways.
Yeah. It just seems like he's a situational player. They want to save him for special teams. Ken Austin was very clear about that at the beginning of the season. They was very clear about that when they signed him. He has not wavered from that in any way. So anyone out there who thinks Banks is going to be a starting receiver and an every down player is just not listening to what the head coach is saying.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm with you. Maybe he sees a few more plays in the offense, but he's going to deal with it the way he's dealt with it whenever he's been on the field anyway, so not much change to Banks's game as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's it, right?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, I apologize everyone out there for my hoarse voice, but we record this Tuesday morning, and I was at the game last night screwing my face off because I just love this team and I love this game. So if I sound a little scratchy, that's why. I've been trying to drink some water as we've been going on, but it hasn't I got downed the bottle pretty quickly, and I should have probably got a second one. Rookie mistake. Won't happen again. I don't really know why I had to go on that tangent, but anyway, just remember that you can get the podcast on iTunes. You can subscribe there. If you want to rate us or give us a review, that'd be great. We'd really appreciate it, both positive and negative. If we're doing something you don't like, let us know. Maybe we can fix it. If we think you're just being a jerk, we're going to tell you to I don't want to swear again. I've already said.
Go suck an egg.
There you go. Go suck an egg. Thank you, buddy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you want to have your questions answered on the show, you can hit us up on Twitter. Mike, give them your handle as always.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am at @JoshSmith_82. This week we got our first question in the comment section of Three Down Nation. So again, feel free to drop a line in there and you'll get name dropped on the show and have your question answered. So that is Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Eat 'em raw.